There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We are here to talk about dreams this afternoon. Good afternoon, Chastity.
Good afternoon,
Helen. Do you love the new studio?
It is phenomenal. There's so much light, massive windows. It's beautiful.
I'm thrilled. I'm lovely to have you here. So enjoy that new car smell. Now, how's your week been? All good?
It's been good. I can't complain. I will say I had the most, maybe this was in preparation for the show today, the most amazing night's sleep. Amazing. You know how sometimes when you sleep so well?
No. No, I don't, Chastity. I really don't.
Well, let me tell you about it. No, but it was like eating a 7-course meal over the course of night and just waking up. But that hasn't happened in a while. So I'm excited to be talking about
you deserved
dreams.
It. How old are your kids?
4, 6, and 7.
Okay, so when my youngest gets to 4, I might get a good night's sleep.
You might get there sooner. You never know.
I hope so.
I'll keep my fingers crossed for you.
Thank you. We had an emotional morning this morning. It's my daughter's last day at nursery. There were some tears. Mine, not hers. She was absolutely fine. She skipped in quite happily. And don't think she really knew what was going on. As mum's going, have a nice day. And then hugged her teacher. It was very uncool of me. Oh. But it's a big transition.
It is.
Mostly for the parents.
In my mind, I just assumed it was her that was crying.
No.
And I thought that was so sweet.
I don't think they do understand, really, because you can say it's your last day, but you know, you have last days of term and, you know, quite frequently, but this is the last time and then she'll be going to. What's interesting, because a friend of mine said, don't use the term big school when you're talking about them moving up. Try to use the term new school, which I think is actually a really good bit of advice for making, because, you know, they're small, things are big. You know, that kind of transition could be a little bit smoother if we use the term new. What's your take on this? How have you dealt with it with your kids?
I think it's just been because there's an older one, or the oldest has kind of already gone through so much of these transitions. It's now you'll get to be with your sibling. Mm-hmm. And so I think the language that we used has shifted. But with my oldest, I would say it was new school. I don't know, but it's interesting because there wasn't much thought about how or why. It was just new experiences,
new friends, new toys.
Yes, absolutely.
We had the kind of induction day a couple of weeks ago where we had to go and, you know, play in her new classroom and meet her new friends and things. And it is really nerve-wracking. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to not let my anxieties pass down to her, because I'm sure she's picking up on it.
Sure, and they experience it in a different way than we do. We're nervous about it because we put our own emotional experience with it. And by this, I mean, when you walk into a new place of employment, you have a new job, there's some anxiety there. You go to you meet a group of individuals for the first time. And, you know, we're very much aware of what our own feelings are, that people are, you know, evaluating, judging, you know, trying to interpret signals. So much is going on for us. But when it comes to little children, they are taking it in a different way. Their memories are different. The things that they key into, the things that they notice are different. And so I think what you were saying about just being sensitive to their experiences are different, and we can have our emotions about it, but not putting that on them.
So I'll try not to cry in front of her again, if at all possible.
But, you know, I think children seeing healthy emotional expression is something that is very, is a positive experience. It helps them to understand emotions, identify emotions in the most experiential way, and that they learn through experience. So by saying, trying to explain what sadness is much more challenging than saying, well, I'm sad right now, and they see it. So I think there's something.
She's 3. She's going through this really, I find, heartwarming stage of saying how excited she is about things. She's like, I'm so excited about swimming. You know, she can't contain it in her tiny body. And I think that's actually a really lovely thing to be reminded of, that children do, that as adults, I don't feel like we do get that excited about things that often.
No.
And for her to go, even this morning, I'm so excited about school. You know, it's lovely to kind of tap into that. So to all the parents over the next few weeks who are making that transition with their children. I have you in my mind. It's not an easy time, but I hope they've all had a good experience and will go on to have further good times wherever they're going on to. It's also a time with people leaving the country. We heard yesterday that some very dear friends are going to be leaving in a few months. And that's a hard thing to try to explain to children, and we'll no doubt be covering this topic in the future. I wanted to get Chastity's opinion on a couple of news stories that have caught my eye over the last few days. Here's a headline for you. Find your passion is bad advice, say Yale and Stanford psychologists.
Agree.
I don't even need to read anymore. Mm-hmm. No? Yes. So your passion isn't out there waiting to be discovered. It's not a mysterious force that will, when found, remove all obstacles from your path. In fact, the psychologists from Yale and Stanford argue in a new study that the pithy mantra, find your passion, might be a dangerous distraction. Mm-hmm. What's your take on this? You're very quick to agree with these findings.
Absolutely. Well, if we think about passion, passion is an emotion. And we know, you know, if we look at a most basic understanding of what emotions do, they motivate our behavior. So when you are afraid of something, you prepare to fight or flight. When you're angry, that's your body telling you, there's something about this situation I don't like. And when you're passionate about something, that's, you know, a wonderful experience, letting you know that you're engaged, you're in it. It's something that resonates with you. At the same time, it is fleeting. Mm-hmm. It's an emotion. Emotions have a very temporary component to them. What can prolong those emotions are our thoughts about them. But getting back to looking at passion, Cal Newport, and it's a fantastic book. It's called So Good They Can't Ignore You, talks about the difference between the passion mindset, where you're basically trying to rely on emotions to propel you through difficult things. And part of that is the challenge is that when you are using emotions, there's not always that positive feedback loop. When you know, persist to think about something you're good at and think about the times that you thought about quitting that. You know, there's something else that's bringing you through, and that passion is not going to bring you through those difficult times. And instead, a more balanced way of looking at it is what Cal Newport calls the craftsman mindset, which is, I want to be good at something. And in fact, looking at how to strengthen your skill set, mm-hmm. become better at something is actually going to feed into the passion and your sense of connectedness to that which you are doing.
And will be more long-term,
Absolutely.
Well, this is almost exactly what they are saying at Yale and Stanford. Paul O'Keefe is the lead researcher, saying, we carefully need to consider what we communicate to people about interests and passions. Saying, telling people to develop their passion actually suggest a more active role that you can take rather than finding, which to me kind of suggests look at taking that scattergun approach to all sorts of hobbies and interests and try and find, you know, the one mm-hmm. that is going to, as he says, magically make all of those obstacles disappear. What would you say your passion is, Chastity?
Ooh, I don't know.
Have you not found it yet?
I don't know if I have one as a passion. There are moments of what Chinstamiliahi calls flow, where you feel
that flow.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I read an article about the concept of flow not so long ago, and it really struck me. So what they mean by flow are those times where you're so caught up in an activity or a moment that time just seems to go by so quickly. And this is a really crass example, but when I used to have a kind of old school iPod, I used to spend, and not even realize it, hours making playlists and putting the music on. And I would look back and go, I've been doing this for 3 hours, but it hadn't felt like that. The other times I've felt it are things like reading, but also sewing. I've mm-hmm. lost myself for hours in sewing and not even realized it. But music, and my brother-in-law's a chef, and he says that's how he feels when he's at work. Mm-hmm. He says time goes by so quickly because he's in the flow. It's almost like a subconscious movement around the kitchen, and he's just in it.
Sure. And with flow, we also know that there's a sweet spot to finding that flow. And so it's important to understand what is flow comprised of. So we're looking at something that is equal parts challenging and equal parts rewarding. So if you're doing something that is fairly easy, you know, will it evoke the same sense of flow as when you've persisted, you've continued to try at it, and you found this like feedback loop where it's the challenge of, in and of itself is engaging, but also rewarding in the same moment.
Could you apply things like gaming to that, where you have got that reward system and it's a bit of a time suck?
I love that you brought that up, because I do think, you know, having this discussion, there'll be a number of listeners that think, oh yeah, I feel that way.
When I play Angry Birds, for example. she said, not speaking from experience at all.
So what I'll caution about applying it to things like gaming is that we also know that there's other neurobiological things that are going on when you are doing things like gaming. And is it possible to have a sense of flow with gaming? Potentially. At the same time, with flow, there's definitely a creative component. There's an autonomous component. So it's not just about being entertained, because you can binge watch Netflix and that is not a sense of flow. You can feel lost and come out of the Netflix coma going, what just happened?
Which is much more passive.
Yes. So when you have those, when you are engaged, so I think the level of engagement is very important in understanding, is it flow or are you looking at being entertained?
From flow to foes, when we come back, we are talking about how to get over your ex. And you might be surprised of the method we've discovered. Stay with us. Getting over your ex, I think a lot of people, including myself, have been there. And whether that's hearts being broken, whether you walk away or you're the one that's left behind, the ex, it's always a tricky one. Now, there's been a new study. This is coming out of the States, where researchers are trying to help people getting over that breakup. So they recruited 24 participants aged 18 to 37 who had been through a breakup and were still upset about it. Each participant needed to provide researchers with 28 photos of their ex, and they were put in a laboratory hooked up to an EEG machine which measured their brainwaves while they thought about that ex. Before viewing each photo, they were given a prompt for how to manage their feelings. So sometimes it would be something negative, thinking to yourself, silently answering a question involving something like, what was an annoying habit of your ex? Picking feet, for example. And then they rated how in love they felt and how positive or negative they felt. Other times they were prompted to rephrase their feelings by a positive statement or an acceptance, something like, it's okay to love someone I'm no longer with. Or it could have been something to distract them from thinking about their ex. So it could have been like, what's your favorite movie? And in the control condition, there were no prompts. So after each prompt, they saw the photo and they had to answer several questions. What would your predictions be on this methodology, Chastity?
It sounds like it probably was pretty helpful.
Thinking about the foot picking while looking at a photo, you'd be right. Negative reappraisal of the ex-partner significantly reduced feelings of love for that ex. So dwelling on an ex's bad qualities is effective for making participants fall out of love. What would your top tips be for getting over a breakup?
Well, in the beginning, you mentioned there's circumstances around the breakup that I think can have an impact on the course of recovery from the breakup. So whether you were the one doing the leaving or you were being left behind, was there an issue about distance? Was there an issue about family? You know, so those reasons for breaking up do have an impact on that recovery process in a lot of ways. But I think what's fascinating about what you were talking about in this particular study is that they made use of different techniques that we know as part of evidence-based therapy. I'm thinking DBT, dialectical behavior therapy, which is highly effective for a number of different disorders.
What does it involve?
It involves looking at primary components related to increasing mindfulness, helping an individual work on interpersonal skills, as well as emotion regulation. And when you were looking at the components that you talked about from the article, the use of distraction. So when you're having an incredibly emotional experience and you're unable to sort of cope with it and you think you're going to make a bad decision as a result of it.
Like what? Like texting them.
Don't show up at their house. Don't park in front of their apartment. And I'm being candid, but I do think people that are you know, I don't want to make light of when people are in tremendous pain and longing for that person back, you can find yourself going to, you know, dark places that you didn't anticipate.
And I think what's interesting is the research does suggest that, you know, dwelling on these negative qualities can be helpful, but only on a kind of moment to moment basis.
Absolutely.
It's not actually that helpful in terms of the long term recovery or grieving of a relationship. It's a case of, if instead of texting them, have a think about their bad habits instead, for kind of nipping that impulse decision in the bud.
Absolutely. And so when you're looking at, you know, distracting yourself away from it, that's one tool that you have. And so ultimately, when you're helping people recover from a breakup, which can be traumatic for a lot of people, so I do not want to underscore just how profoundly painful breakups can be. But there's distraction, there's managing the emotions. That's what I heard in there. So this is where that mindfulness skills comes into DBT, how to sit with really painful emotions. Acceptance and commitment therapy has a big component to that, where it's like, people are afraid to feel fear, they're afraid to feel sadness, and the more you fight it, the longer it sticks around, the more painful it is. So let's look at ways we can invite our pain to sit with us. We don't have to be overwhelmed by it. We don't have to succumb to it. We don't have to submit to it. But it's, how do we invite it in and just let it be present with us? There's also, what you were talking about is reality testing as well. So this is sort of the cognitive restructuring of how you think about that person. So when you're in recovery mode from a breakup, you are thinking about everything wonderful, positive, and how you're never going to find love or that person again. And this is, you know, oftentimes what I'm citing is the person who has been the person broken up with. And we know that there is no one perfect, and that in relationships, there were definitely annoying things. There were things that where you felt disrespected, you didn't feel like there was trust. And so it's important, not as a smear campaign against that person, but to understand and bring to awareness that, yes, they might have been the love of your life, but they picked their toes and, you know, they chewed with their mouth open. And you found that there were times when you were at
dinner, watched Netflix without you, even though you'd agreed you would finish watching that together.
We need to process that, because that is very key. There is something to be said for that. It's like, I asked you to wait to watch that show with me. So I'm there with you. So those skills are the components to that study. You know, used some very evidence-based approaches and trying to understand what's going to help people. So it's all about building your tools.
You're listening to On the Couch. It's Wednesday. I'm Helen Farmer, with you until 2 o'clock live on Dubai Eye 103.8. Joined by Chastity O'Connell, mental health counsellor at the Human Relations Institute and Clinic, where she deals with children, teens and adults. That's, of course, all sorts of issues, from behavioural problems to marital discord. And today we are talking about dreams, what purpose they serve, what certain dream motifs mean, and looking into why and when we dream. We'd love to hear yours. Join the conversation and have any questions answered by texting us on 4001. You can use the free Dubai Eye Messenger app or call our new number 04871 5500, and anyone who messages in on the topic of dreams will be put into the draw to win a 500 dirham voucher to spend at View by the Dusit Thani Dubai. They're showing all the World Cup action there. They've got a great air-conditioned tent. It's licensed, and they're serving food from Jones the Grocer too. So send in your dream-related comment or question to the show before 2 o'clock, and you could be winning. Chastity, yes. I want to unpick the whole issue of dreams. And I've got to be honest, it's a big topic. Mm-hmm. So we're going to try our best over the next hour and a half. One fact that really made me giggle was there's a West African group called the Ashanti who take dreams so seriously that they allow a husband to take legal action against another man if he's had a dream about his wife.
Wow.
Which I think kind of is tapping into that power of the subconscious. And speaking as someone who's, I frequently wake up annoyed with my husband for something that he's done in a dream.
I'm glad to hear you're not the only one. I think there are a lot of listeners out there, air quotes.
Mm-hmm. Is that you? Yeah, pointing at yourself. Yeah.
Listener air quotes. Uh-huh. That maybe have had that same experience where it's so vivid, it was so painful, it was so intense that when you wake up the next morning, it's hard for you to look at, well, whether it be your spouse, your child, a professor, in the same way, because it's just, it felt so real. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to switch that off.
Being there. So let's start at the beginning. When do we dream?
So when we, fascinatingly enough, with dreams, a lot of what we know about dreams today has only happened in the past 50, 60 years. So the understanding of dreams has really, really shifted. We dream all night long. And so previously it was thought that we only dream in REM sleep, which is rapid eye movement sleep, but we dream all night. It's just an REM that they tend to be more intense. We tend to remember them. It's a shorter span of our sleep cycle. And so we tend to retain more from REM. But night terrors, for example, and those of you with children, people that have suffered with, you know, adults that suffer with night terrors, those tend to occur in sort of the third level of non-REM sleep. But we don't tend to remember those. But you do tend to remember those, you know, visceral reactions that happen. So we dream all night long.
So the REM sleep, does that tend to happen as we're falling asleep and then towards the morning as well? Or is that throughout the night?
It's throughout the night. So what is amazing about sleep is that it is a very dynamic process, and it's going through, you know, hour to 90 minute shifts in what we do during the night, or our sleep cycle, for example. So we enter REM sleep maybe 90 minutes after drifting off, and that's a process of going from non-REM sleep one to non-REM sleep two to non-REM sleep three, and then back up to REM sleep. And so it's in that, and that cycles throughout the night, actually. So they're only sips of time where we're in REM sleep, and that can be anywhere from 90 minutes to 100 minutes or so that we're actually in REM sleep.
Ben has messaged in saying, I had a dream that I had to present on Dubai Eye. Ben, seriously, since with the new office move and the new technology, I have had so many anxiety dreams about work, about having to go into a studio with no guests and not knowing what we're talking about.
Do tell. Let's unpack
them. Let's not unpack it live on the radio. Thank you very much. I had a couple of dreams this week that have really made me chuckle. I had one about an ex who kind of jilted me, basically. And I dreamt that I met him. And he was sitting on the floor taking off his shoes. And when he took off his shoes, he had feet the same size as a baby's. Which I like to think is kind of my way of basically emasculating him. giving him tiny little feet.
With tiny little shoes.
Tiny little shoes. Yeah. But it is bizarre what our brains can conjure up in that time. Text is saying, I frequently wake up angry at my husband for things he's done in my dreams. Is my subconscious trying to tell me something?
Let's unpack it a bit more.
Let's.
With dreams, it's hard to give straight up yes or no answers. And even with like sort of dream analysis, there's been, you know, quite a few shifts in how you help people understand their dreams. Before, there was more of a dream interpretation method where, you know, the sort of all-knowing therapist knew what the symbols mean and would, you know, tell the prospective client or patient, you know, what their dream meant based on the different symbols. Now that method has shifted more into a collaborative interpretive or analysis method where, you know, as the dreamer, you live in your life, you know what possibly there's more other than this universal understanding, you know what the symbols mean to you. So that's what I should say is that, you know, the idea of water in a dream, you know, if you were to, you know, Google water dream interpretation, you know, might come up with responses that, you know, water is related to emotions, for example. And there might be something to that, but what does water mean for you? Are you afraid of water? Do you like water? Are you afraid of water in real life? And yet you were, you know, neck deep in the ocean. And so there's a lot to unpack there with your understanding. So what I'm trying to say here is that it really is about helping the person understand what the dream means for them. And it's much more I guess, subjective.
It's not as simple as looking, you know, down in the dictionary for
absolutely
tiny feet. Absolutely. And it means X, Y, Z. I'm bringing in Joe, our producer here, because we were talking about reoccurring dreams this morning in the office. And her reoccurring dream basically sent shivers down my spine. And I think we should get a little bit of analysis on it. Joe?
Oh, it's a shocker.
I'm really sorry about this, guys.
We can process. You know, you might find you feel better after talking about it, Joe.
Oh, I do talk about it quite a lot because it's like, oh no, I had that awful dream again. So the dream is, and it's very vivid, and it's set in a real place where I used to live here in Dubai with our family, with the children growing up. And it was me not being able to find one of the children, and they've all appeared in this dream. And it is me running around the garden, running to the pool, looking to the pool and finding one of my babies at the bottom of the pool. But the good news is that I always managed to get them out from the bottom of the pool and resuscitate them and bring them back to life. But it is so vivid.
Wow.
I know.
It just...
It was awful.
Every parent's
And when I wake up, when waking up is such a relief, such a relief. And then you go and check your baby.
Wow.
Oh, I know. It's Chastity. Come on, Chastity.
Can we get a quick analysis for Joe's, you know, kind of peace of mind and mine, please?
I haven't had it recently. I haven't had it for a long time. And we've moved away from that area. So
what I find interesting about dreams is just this phenomenon that people are so open and willing to talk about dreams. And you just, you just bared, you know, what is your mind at its most vulnerable. So I think that's what makes them so incredible. So we could go through, we can do this of two ways. You let me know. There's, you know, some initial thoughts if we were to do this in a more traditional interpretive method. But then there's also, I can ask you questions about like, well, you know, what does the pool mean for you? You know, pretend I'm from a different planet, and what is a baby? You know, and although that may seem silly and a bit candid, this lets me know what those symbols in the dream mean for you rather than this interpretive method. But I can give you like a canned interpretation in 30 seconds if that's...
Go for it. Go for your life.
Okay.
I'm all open.
Well, some would say that whenever we dream about babies, it's like new hope, new opportunities. You know, and that's what, you know, children represent. Some might also say that it represents aspects of self. And so one way you could look at this, again, this is not how I would necessarily do dream interpretation, but you could say that perhaps the baby represents part of yourself that's growing and changing, but isn't getting nurtured, isn't getting the attention that it needs, and that the dream is acting as a kind of reminder that don't forget to nurture this part of yourself, and you going in and saving the baby just in the nick of time might be... you becoming aware that this is a part of your life, a part of yourself that needs more attention, and you're meeting it, you know, just in time, but just content, you know, that reminder that you need to get back to yourself in you know, some aspect of self.
Does that help, Joe?
Where do I start now? This really is therapy. It's great. Now, when we go to a break, we'll carry that one on.
If you would like a bit of dream interpretation here live on the show, send in a quick message. Any related questions to dreams or comments on 4001 or the text line, or you can message us for free using the Dubai iMessage app. We'll put you into the draw to win that 500 dirham voucher to spend at View by the Dusit Tani Dubai. They're showing all the World Cup action. It's licensed, there's a great air-conditioned tent there, and all the food is by Jones the Grocer. For 500 dirhams to spend on food and beverages, just send in your question or comment about dreams before 2 o'clock, and we'll put you into the draw. When we come back, we're going to be demystifying some of those common dream motifs, from teeth to falling. I mentioned there, Chastity, why we dream. Why do we dream? What's our brain doing during those sleeping hours?
I think this is what makes looking at dreams all the more compelling, which is we don't know. There is no definitive answer as to why we dream. There's theories about it, ranging from information processing is how we consolidate memories, ranging to this idea that it helps us sort of work out and sort out the events of the day, you know, helping, you know, establish or develop and strengthen neural pathways. But the reality is we still don't have a firm understanding of why we dream. And to me, that's just fascinating. It's just this, you know, sort of unknown. It's like space.
Or the deepest, darkest parts of the ocean.
Or exactly, of our minds.
But it is fascinating. It is crazy to think where your brain goes to. And sometimes you can wake up from a dream and be quite disturbed by it. Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about those kind of the teeth dreams, which I get a lot. I probably get a teeth dream about at least once a month. And it's biting down on something and feeling teeth disintegrate and, you know, almost like spitting out bits of teeth into my hand, or looking in the mirror and seeing that teeth are missing. And it's really frightening. And in the dream, I'm going, I hope this is a dream.
You're aware of it in the dream.
Because I have the dream so much. What? Tell me, what do the teeth dreams mean, Chastity? Please make it nice. Because I have it so often.
It's not that.
It's really bad, isn't it?
It's not that it's bad. You know, I think this is what is, when you're looking at a dream, ultimately the sort of modern approaches to sort of dream analysis put the interpretation in the hands of the dreamer. And so in this case, so maybe contrasting what just happened with Jo when she shared her dream, and it's like, oh, well, it's about this. Looking at, you know, sort of exploring what's happening for you in the dream, and what are you breaking down the components of the dream. What are you trying to eat in the dream? Is it something that you actually like?
I don't know. But sometimes it's not based on a food. Sometimes it's just biting down in my mouth and the teeth kind of splaying out. It's just a horrible dream to have. It really, really is.
And what's going on in and around the dream? Are you at a restaurant?
No, I'm at home on my own normally. Or I can be in a social setting and I'm going, oh my goodness, my tooth's just fallen out. How can I hide this from people?
Ah, and so you're in this situation where you're very aware that something, is it painful?
No, it's just suddenly not there, or I can feel it in my mouth. Yeah, I feel very self-conscious about it.
And you're trying to hide it, it sounds like. So this very unpleasant situation that you're trying to hide.
Really uncomfortable.
Are you aware in the dream that it is something unusual?
Yes, like, definitely.
Okay. So something that makes you different from the other people that you're around.
Oh, great. Where's this going, Chastity?
I don't know. In our interaction right now, I would not be laughing.
You'd be charging me handsomely for my therapy time.
For you, you know, maybe a discount. This is a different experience. And it's one of the experiences, similar to one of the experiences we had at the clinic. We have a fantastic group of interns. And so we did some dream analysis groups. And it's, you know, more exploring, putting, again, this onus back on the dreamer to make sense of what it might mean. And so what's interesting is, I'm guessing by your reaction, that there's more things that are coming up. We don't have to talk about those on radio.
Thanks, Chastity.
But you're welcome. But that it can also be a very self-awareness growing process. Mm-hmm. You know, just in, you know, are you eating something? Do you like what you're eating? You know, are you around other people? So you're aware and you're trying to hide it. So there's lots of emotions around dreams. And we also know from research, what's fascinating is that when you are experiencing a dream, it is as if your body is experiencing it in waking life without the input of visual stimuli. Like, this is fascinating. So the idea that you're experiencing, the emotions that you're experiencing, the sensations, there is no visual stimuli. Your mind is generating this. And so it's your mind. And so I think what's important is to honor, in the sort of dream interpretation process, that you have a lot more answers than you think you do. And it's just, you know, working, you know, it's very Michigan.
Working through my issues.
Working through it collaboratively to sort of understand what is the dream trying to say to you? What is it trying to bring to awareness in you?
Nadia here saying, I had a dream I stole a red Vespa in Rome and was able to drive along the walls and ceiling of St. Peter's Basilica. As a punishment for ruining the art, I had to live the rest of my life with a ball of my own hair in my mouth. oh, that's horrendous. Ella saying, Helen, gosh, I hear you. I often have teeth dreams. It's horrible. And I can't help this happening in the dream. Crumbling of teeth coming out. Nightmare. No name on this one saying, I don't remember my dreams anymore. Too many kids. I'm sleeping from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. I used to remember them a lot more. Am I missing out on something in my psyche? What's your take on that, Chastity?
I don't want to necessarily say that there's something missing out in the psyche, but looking from a sort of practical scientific perspective, not getting enough sleep affects our sleep cycle. And so that affects how many cycles of REM sleep we have. It also affects what sort of stage of sleep we're waking up in. So if we're waking up in non-REM sleep 3, for example, which is, you know, the deepest level of sleep, then you're much less likely to remember your dreams. So part of it is this, you know, practical making sure that we get, you know, that 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night, which I know is hard for families. It's hard on moms. And but it is about trying to make that a priority from you know, just a general perspective. Sleep is so important to our psychological well-being, to our health. We cannot live without it, and it has lasting effects. So I say this with caution, though, because what's interesting is when you talk to people about getting more sleep, and especially people that are struggling with sleep, it stresses them out even more. It's like, oh, I'm not sleeping. And there's, you know, I'm sure there's many listeners out there that have been staring at the clock, saying, I'm trying to sleep. I know how important this is. The stakes are high. And, you know, that is just, you know, a vicious cycle.
Not helpful. Yeah. We've had a couple of questions here about snakes. If you've got any questions when it comes to motifs, reoccurring dreams or nightmares, get in touch 4001 on the text or use the Dubai Eye Messenger app. One saying, years ago, I dreamt about snakes a lot and was told it was about someone in my life who couldn't be trusted. I cut her out and never had the dream again.
Interesting.
And Alf is asking, what significance do snakes in your dreams have? Any clues on that, Chastity?
Okay, so this is where we get more into interpretation. And what I would say, rather than saying that snakes represent something negative, because for folks that are afraid of snakes, you know, there's...
Which are many people.
Many people. But there are quite a number of people that like snakes. So it's really important, again, to understand what the dreamer's perspective on it is. And so what I would ask questions about, and this is to facilitate that self-exploration, that self-awareness, are questions around, you know, what was the snake doing to you in the dream? Are you afraid of snakes in real life? You know, was it daytime? Was it nighttime? What were some of the circumstances around the snake? And I think just, you know, and similar to the questions that I was asking you with the teeth falling out, just understanding some of those elements, taking you out of that sort of interpretive, taking it out of that interpretation, like where I know the answers to the dream that you're having, but just facilitating this idea that, you know, how do I feel about snakes? Was I afraid of snakes in the dream and I'm not afraid of them in real life? What's going on for me in waking life? You know, is this, you know, the one somewhat credible dream interpretation dictionary, you know, talks about snakes as representing something positive. And so this is what I mean. Like when you get into interpretation, you'll have a lot of different takes or definitions of what it might mean. So it really is important to look at what your emotions are around it, what is the setting like, and what's going on in your own life. Is the snake a warning? You know, is the snake representing a reality that perhaps you were afraid of something and you're working through that fear, and the presence of that reoccurring snake is, you know, signifying that this is something you're afraid of and you're not running away from it in the dream. Mm-hmm. And you might have run away from it in real life. So are you staying present with it and working through the fear, working through a difficult relationship or so?
Coming back to the point of never remembering dreams, someone's saying, why do I never, ever recall any dreams? I sleep 8 hours every night and never remember them. Mm. It's interesting, actually, in terms of the differences between men and women and that remembering factor. In general, pregnant women remember dreams more than anyone else in the population. Mm-hmm. I had really vivid dreams when I was pregnant, like crazy dreams. And some were baby related. Some were I'd give birth and the baby could talk like you and I are talking now.
Oh, nice. What so, did the baby say?
we were just chatting, which obviously means that I was going to have a highly intelligent baby. Absolutely. In my own dream interpretation. But according to one theory, the changes in the brain that occur during sleep do not support the information processing and storage needed for memory formation to take place. So it's quite hard for that dream and that memory to be happening at the same time. And it seems that brain scans of sleeping individuals have shown that the frontal lobes, that's the area that plays a key role in memory formation, are inactive during that REM, that REM sleep, which is the stage in which case most dreaming does occur. Now, researchers in the University of Adelaide, if you are interested in remembering your dreams, say that increasing your B6 intake, so that can be as simple as eating foods that have a high concentration, so things like bananas, or taking a supplement, believe that can help you experience lucid dreaming and remembering those dreams. Dr. Denholm, who's behind the study, said this is the first time that such a study into effects of vitamins B6 and other V vitamins on dreams have been carried out on a large and diverse group of people. And our research shows that taking vitamin B6 improved people's ability to recall dreams compared to a placebo.
Sure. Well, and there's also steps that you can take from a really practical perspective to help facilitate remembering of dreams. And it could be as simple as, you know, before you go to bed, having that quiet time, you know, where we're not looking at our phones, but also the intention of trying to remember the dream, keeping a dream journal next to your bed, one that when you wake up, immediately upon waking, you can jot down ideas. Because as the day goes on, except with the exception of those really intense, vivid dreams, you're much more likely to forget them. But there are a number of different strategies that you can take. You know, B6 might be one of them, as well as just the intention of, I would like to remember my dreams. And that's really effective for a lot of people.
You do a little voice note on your phone when you wake up, and instead of boring your partner about what you dreamt about, just quickly record it and play it back later.
You can do that as well.
Do it.
It all depends.
And then send us the voice note so we can hear about your weird dreams.
There's an idea.
Alf, you got in touch about the snake saying, he's afraid of them. However, they are there in the dream, but not harming me.
Interesting. Interesting. So being afraid of snakes in real life, but in the dream, is there fear around the snakes? They're not hurting you. So is it... And this is, there's a lot more dialogue that would need to take place in order sort of to understand what this dream, the specific significance that this dream might have for this individual. For, is it Elf? Yes. But if they're not harming you in the dream, you know, what are your feelings around that? What are they doing? Are they just there in front of you? And, you know, are there situations in your waking life where there are things that maybe you're really afraid of, but when you actually think about it, when you sit with it, there isn't much to be afraid of because they're not doing anything to you. And so I think, you know, it could be a really powerful sort of a really powerful reminder that some of the fears we face, the anxieties that we face, have more to do with our perspective and our perception of them, mm-hmm, than them actually causing harm, and that we might have a choice in how we manage that fear or how we relate to the things that scare us.
I do get your comments and questions in on the topic of dreams. Absolutely loving this topic today. Anita saying, hi everyone, good topic about sleep and dreams. I dream so long that I feel I'm exhausted. I feel like I've seen a movie then had rest. Is this good for my body or is something wrong? I'm like you, Anita. I have these kind of intense, almost like kind of films or novels with plots and subplots and, you know, secondary characters. You know, it's very, very involved. But if she's waking up tired, is that cause for concern?
As far as concern, what I might suggest is just taking some time and jotting down these dreams. You know, somehow some parts of your mind are thinking that this is important for you to hold on to, that there's something here that needs to be processed. And many of the dream analysis approaches would say that dreams happen to bring awareness to that which might be unknown or hidden for us. And so, you know, thinking about dreams as sort of a post-it note reminder, mm-hmm, you know, trying to make us aware of certain things. And just by jotting it down, writing those dreams down, and maybe reflecting on, you know, what is going on in my waking life that might pertain to this dream could be helpful in interrupting the loop. We know that with PTSD nightmares, for example, In fact, there's some fascinating research on imagery rehearsal therapy, because people who experience PTSD nightmares experience them at a rate of something like 50 to 90% of nightmares, and whereas the rest of the general population experiences 3 to 5%. So it is a dramatic increase that is very disruptive. And so one of the symptoms of PTSD are these nightmares, but previously treatments have really focused on, you know, things like prolonged exposure, helping process through the trauma, but not as much on helping people process the nightmare, which can be extremely debilitating. And so through imagery rehearsal therapy, as well as there's other different types of focusing oriented therapy, for example, they help people process the actual nightmare, the content of the nightmare. And so this is a reoccurring dream that's happening, looking at, you know, the elements of the content and spending some time with it. It's your mind talking to yourself.
Oh, and what is it saying? When we come back, we're going to be talking about that weird feeling where it feels like you might be falling off a cliff. Got a question here saying, I get very normal dreams mostly, but one reoccurring one is it's my exam and I'm not prepared for it. In an extended version, I'm not able to write anything in that exam. Chastity, that's a classic.
Oh my goodness, so many flashback dreams.
Also made worse if you're also naked at the same time.
Exactly. So the, you know, showing up for the exam, not having studied, those, you know, ideas of, if you think about the emotions involved in that, is just, you know, not feeling that there's a task there, that there's something that needs to be done and not feeling necessarily prepared for it. So that's kind of a more literal understanding. But there are a number of common dream themes. And what's amazing to look at is just this kind of universality around.
Absolutely.
Around dreaming.
So many people have the similar themes, which could be the falling, the kind of naked in public and not in a good way. It could be the exam stress,
the teeth dream.
The
I need a place to go to the bathroom and I can't find
anyone. I've never had that one.
Neither have I.
Yeah,
I've just heard people.
Clearly. One I've had a lot recently is silent screaming dreams where I need help and I'm trying to shout, but no noise is coming out of my mouth. And I don't need to be a dream analyst to figure out that that's probably not the most positive thing and probably to do with analysis or literally like I have not got a voice. Nadia, the Human Relations Institute clinic intern, is with us in the studio and she just looked at me, jaw to the floor. Nadia, you're not so sure about that one, hey? You looked horrified. Just trust me. So I am sorry about that, Nadia. I am truly, truly sorry that it's a pretty upsetting one. So I apologize profusely if I appalled you on that.
I'm not going to sleep tonight.
Yeah. Well, it's just it's a really, really strange one because you're running, you're powerless, you're trying to get help. And yeah, it's a bit of a disturbing one, it has to be said. We've got quite a message in here from Fatima saying, I get really vivid dreams that sometimes leave me exhausted, like I've got no rest. The weirdest dream I've had is that we're at a park near my parents' place and suddenly there's a T-Rex chasing me and my friends and I get into a giant hamster ball. I don't know where my friends went. And it started rolling, running in the hamster ball and entered Imbatuta Mall. Somehow got into the AC vents to hide from the dinosaur. And as I got into the vent as well, it started chasing me. My inexpert diagnosis would be like lay off the Jurassic Park films.
There's a lot of cheese before bed. Yeah. No, I love this dream. I think this is what's fascinating to see what the mind puts together the mind is playing when we are at rest. So it's fantastic. So the creativity in dreams, and in fact, you hear about different artists actually tapping into that surrealism, that experience of the dream and how it translates into, you know, creativity
and
art.
And it can be music as well, of people saying that literally, you know, melodies can come to them in their dreams. Mm-hmm. We've had two people, we've had Debbie and we've had Brian getting in touch, talking about that feeling when you've just fallen asleep, like you're feeling like you're falling off a cliff and you have that weightlessness and that sudden,
yeah.
What is that about, Justine?
It's the hypnagogic jerk, which is that, you know, the sensation, it's kind of like when things have fallen out of alignment ever so slightly neurochemically, where your body's drifting off and your mind, your body's drifting off and your mind's trying to catch up, and that you see it in some ways, probably the most, is it different manifestation, but similar experiences when you put down a newborn baby and if they're not swaddled,
the hands fly
and
out.
They flail. That's a reflex. But it is, we can experience something like that, or hearing a loud bang. We can also hear noises that aren't there when we're drifting off to sleep. So hearing that loud slam as if there was a crash, and you wake up and you're like, what is that? So that's another thing that happens just as we're drifting off.
So the falling dreams typically do begin in kind of the beginning of the night, in that stage one sleep. Now, psychologists are saying that apparently falling dreams are rooted in our early experiences as toddlers taking our first steps on two legs. Mm. And some sociobiologists argue that our fear of falling derives from that experience in kind of prehistoric ancestors afraid of tumbling out of trees during the night. Mm. Now, I'm going to ask you something, and I really hate these words. Old hag syndrome. This is not, you know, me looking in the mirror before I put my makeup on in the morning. Sleep paralysis occurs in as many as 40% of people. It happens when a sleeper wakes, recognizes his or her surroundings, but is unable to move for as long as a minute. And the folklore explanation is that it's caused by a witch or an old hag coming to get you in your sleep and sitting on your chest. Have you ever experienced that?
I've heard that, have experienced it, and it is terrifying. And then you kind of come to and everything is fine again. But, you know, during REM sleep, we are largely paralyzed. And so other than our eye movements and a few twitches here and a few knee jerks there, we're not able to move. And so it's, you know, the idea that this would happen and still linger upon waking is... it's not too, I don't think it's an old hag.
Good.
But far be it from me to besmirch someone's cultural tradition.
She said diplomatically. Joined now on the phone by Oneza. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
We're well, thank you. I understand you've been having some lucid dreams.
Oh my God. I'm so glad you guys are having this topic, because I've actually been trying to reach out to people who also lucid dream. And I've seen like really crazy groups on Facebook, but we'll
try and steer you away from the crazy and try and get you some good information this afternoon. Chasti, for anyone who doesn't know, what is a lucid dream? And then we'll see if we can help Oneza.
So a lucid dream is kind of an incredible phenomenon where you're aware that you're dreaming, that you're able to manipulate your activities in the dream, and that you're also able to plan, like you're able to recall past memories, incorporate memories into your dream, plan, navigate, which in dreams typically we're sort of there as part of whatever our mind puts forward. So a lucid dream is you're aware of what's going on and you can do something about it. So it's incredibly empowering.
Ooh,
for people.
So Oneza, how does that kind of manifest with you? What have you been experiencing?
It was amazing, like she's saying. It was the first time I actually experienced it. It's like I could fly, and I knew I was flying, and I was actually flying around in the room where I was sleeping. And it's like an out-of-body experience. So I was shooting bubbles out of my hand, and it was like so amazing.
Yes.
That's great.
Yes, then, superhero, Oneza.
And the latest one I had was, I have like this Apple TV that does these really amazing screensavers, and it's like you can see like a very sky high view of any parts of the world. So they have one on the Burj Khalifa, which looks amazing. And I really watch that. It's just a very slow video, and I watch it, and I really like it. And it came in my video, and I was actually able to fly around the Burj Khalifa. It was so amazing. I can't even explain it to you guys, because it's like I open a window and I'm like, can I do this? I know I'm dreaming, but can I do this or can't I do it? And I decide that, yes, I can. And then I actually go ahead and fly around it. And I can't explain it to you.
I'm really envious. I think to have that the opportunity to kind of explore and have fun, as long as it is a kind of a pleasurable and positive experience. But then I guess if you do have some control over it, you could then manipulate it if dreams are going in a direction that
so
you didn't
like. Yeah, I'm manipulating it. And then after when I woke up, I was like, so in my dream, I'm like, now I'm like, I've flown enough. I need to wake up. And I'm telling myself in my dream, you're still sleeping. You're still in your bed. you open your eyes and you will wake up. And then I opened my eyes.
So you'll never oversleep ever again. That sounds amazing. And how often are you having these lucid dreams?
So it first happened to me 6 months ago, and then it happened again just recently, about a week ago, with this dream. And then when I got up, I was like, hang on, is this still the dream, or am I awake? Oh. For like a second, it was like that. And then I realized, no, this is real.
Chelsea, are there some people that are more prone to having lucid dreams than others, or is there a kind of a stage of sleep where they're more common?
It's an interesting phenomenon. And I would, you know, on lucid dreaming, there's a lot of research looking at this because of that quality of being able to control. And there's research that's been done on the connection between lucid dreaming and psychological well-being, people that exercise that sense of control, which it doesn't happen often. So the fact that it's happening for Aniza is amazing.
It is.
And at the same time, one point that you brought up that I think is excellent to highlight is just the fact that dreaming, as far as going to Google and researching, can be really tricky. So if you look up, you know, understanding what dreams mean, you're going to get taken to a lot of sites that may or may not be helpful. And so what I would suggest is that when you're looking at these terms, like the American Psychological Association, if you Google APA and dreaming, there's different divisions that can help put you in contact with more credible resources, because they're dreaming in and of itself, just because there is so much that is unknown about it, it is challenging to find what's credible or not. But Harvard, actually, they put out a number. So if you Google Harvard and dreams, there's a number of excellent, really well done articles based on research. So one of the things that I love that you brought up is your own struggle in finding Facebook groups and things that can help you. So I really want to encourage you and other listeners to try and really be, what's the word I'm looking for? We're being critical consumers of the kind of information out there. So there's
Because there's a couple of really weird things, like they're like, take this pill to have more lucid dreams.
Careful of that.
It's great. I will look that up. Harvard and dreams, is it?
Harvard and dreams and American Psychological Association. I'm sure there's the British Psychological Association might have some research on dreams. There's some great research coming out of Harvard, Stanford, and Yale regarding dreams. You know, and you'll be able to see it based on if they're talking about studies and research as opposed to one person's experience. If everything is from a personal perspective, then I'd be a bit more suspicious about what you're reading.
And I would just say, enjoy them, Aniza. That sounds amazing.
Thank you for having
a great afternoon. Thanks. Now, we've text here, which made me giggle, and I need to read it to you. 40001 to join the conversation this afternoon on the text line. You can message us for free on the app, and you're also more than welcome to give us a call as well. And anyone who sends in a message relating to dreams between 12 and 2 o'clock, so you've got 20 minutes left, we'll put into the draw to win that 500 dirham voucher to spend at View by Dusit Tani. No name on this one, but says, for years I've had the same dream where I'm in different situations where I forget to put my bra on and go out. This would be very noticeable, in brackets. What does it mean?
Wow. You just kind of throw that one on me.
Well, you know, keep you on your toes, Rusty.
Well, if we look at a bra is a supportive instrument. are we really going to do this?
No, but I was thinking, is it related to that kind of anxiety? You know, it's like kind of a bit almost like a naked dream, but, you know, being unprepared and feeling vulnerable and people looking at you.
Sure. Well, there's, I think, a number of angles you could take on this. And one is that, you know, you could think about what a bra does. As far as support is concerned, you could also look at...
stitched you up here, Chastity.
A little bit. but you could also look at what it would mean. You know, Allison mentioned that going out without the bra on would be extremely noticeable. So what would be the fear that people would be saying or thinking about going out without a bra? And are we looking at one of those situations of, like, you know, and it's a very intimate part of the body. And so feeling exposed, are we talking about feeling exposed? Are we talking about having people understand or look at us and evaluate us unfairly because we don't have some aspect in our lives?
I was going to use the word control there, but I thought that might be taken out of context as well. But as you say, it is all about that context. It's about how does that make you feel in that moment, mm-hmm. and what does that item or individual or animal even mean to you in those waking hours as well, and mm-hmm. how you interact with them in your sleep. I want to ask you about children and dreams, actually, because mm-hmm. it seems like childhood dreams seem to be quite a lot shorter, and nightmares are more common with children mm-hmm. than they are with adults. Why is this?
It's a great question. And, you know, what I'd be saying is a lot of sort of speculation on, you know, children, they tend to spend much more time in REM sleep. So there is a just pure quantitative perspective here. I noticed one of the callers mentioned not dreaming as much. When we do get older, we have less time in REM sleep as well. So children spend more time in REM sleep and tend to experience frequent waking. And so they're much more as you know, and so you're much more likely to remember your dreams when you're woken up in proximity to REM sleep. So the closer you are or being in REM sleep, the much more likely you are to remember your dreams. So that's definitely part of it.
What's the difference between a nightmare and a night terror?
So a nightmare is a very vivid, intense, terrifying, painful dream. And that occurs in REM sleep, whereas a night terror occurs in non-REM sleep 3, so our deepest stage of sleep, and we tend not to remember what night terrors are, and they tend to happen more with children.
Okay, I hope that helps. Lots of questions and comments coming in on the topic of dreams. Nathie's asking, I used to dream of flying and digging and finding money. What does that mean? Ooh, I like that.
I know. You know what?
What an amazing feeling that would be in a dream to find money.
Absolutely. I'm thinking treasure maps, you know?
Yeah, like pirates.
Pirate treasure.
Where does money kind of come into dreams? What significance would that have as a symbol?
Well, this is, I know it must feel like I'm answering a question with a question. And it depends on what the relevance is for the dreamer. And so when you ask people, and it's funny because when you're talking about a dream, and when you're talking about different aspects or elements of life, they do hold, although we might see the same thing, or we might understand that word from a definition perspective, it means something very different. So if you ask people, and it'd be interesting, what do you think money is? You know,
are you asking me now?
If you'd like to answer.
No, I don't. Thank you.
And so for some people, it's security. For some people, it's stability. Some people, it represents opportunity. For others, it might represent access to goods. It might mm-hmm. be prestige. So there's just in, you know, 5 seconds of thinking about what money means for different people, offers insight into what it means to that person in their dream. And so if it's finding money, and money is seen as something happy and frivolous, then, you know, are we talking about adventure? If it's looking for security, if money represents something like security, is it this idea of safety? So it's, you know, frustrating to answer that question with a question.
No, but I think that's a really good answer because it does speak to that, what it means as a symbol. Mm-hmm. to you, and it really using it as a jumping off point.
Sure. And making it individual. And I think this is what's key, because if you do ask folks about, you know, dream interpretation or looking things up in a dream dictionary, more often than not, people say it's deeply unsatisfying because mm-hmm. you have an idea. You have, first of all, the dream that you generated. You might have some inkling of what that means in your heart and in your mind. And then you go to a dream dictionary and it's like you dreamt about shoes, or you dreamt about an airplane. This is an example that just happened. Someone had dreamt about an airplane, and you go to the dream dictionary, and it says a conveyance to take you from one area to another. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you're moving in one direction? And you think,
this does not resonate with me at all.
Absolutely not. And so I think in some ways it can be really discouraging. And if you look at the heart and soul of what I think the importance of dream analysis is, it really is that self-exploration, that self-awareness that we don't spend time getting to understand who we are, what we want to be about, and what's important to us.
We talk about dreams. Chastity O'Connell joins me in the studio live, mental health counselor at the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. Chastity, what if you're blind? What about dreaming if you can't see?
So great question. And some studies, you know, they look at, there's an important distinction to be made at the onset of blindness. Is it something from birth? Is it, are we talking about cortical blindness? Are we talking, what type of impairment are we looking at in terms of vision? There's a great quote I'd love to read.
Of course.
And it's from Bertolo, Maestra, Barrio, and Antona from 2017 research study. When a blind man is asked if he dreams, the answer is immediate. Yes. But if we ask him if he sees anything in the dream, the answer is always doubtful because he does not know what is to see. Even if there were images and colors in his brain during the dream, how could he recognize them? There is, therefore, no direct way through dream reports to evaluate the presence of visual activation in the dream of congenitally blind subjects. Like blindness during waking life, what you'll see is when that sense of vision is reduced, there is an increase in importance of other sensations. So heightened sense.
Touch and smell and
absolutely.
Taste.
And so you might have dreams that represent, that are characterized as much more according to sense and touch, as opposed to what I saw. You know, as people with sight, we rely so much on our vision. In fact, what we see can override what we actually touch and smell and hear, because we're so vision dominant. But when we stop being vision dominant, you know, there's other sensations that take over for us.
I thought was really interesting, there was a study that showed those who watch black and white television as youngsters tend to have more monochrome dreams than children who watch color television. And in studies where dreamers have been woken up kind of mid sleep cycle and asked to select colors from a chart that match those in their dreams, soft pastel colors are those most frequently chosen. So that kind of, you know, in TV you see that kind of dreamy kind of montage or segment, and it's a bit blurred and it's a bit soft. That does seem to be based in truth.
Yeah.
Now I ask people to get in touch and let me know if you are bilingual. What language do you dream in? Matthew's saying, I mostly dream in languages I hear most. Now, I usually dream in English, but sometimes Arabic. When I lived in the Netherlands and spoke Dutch all day, I dreamt equally in English and Dutch. Sometimes I dreamt in German when living in Germany, and even dreamt in an African language. I was a beginner, but heard it all day.
Wow.
That's amazing.
It is. It really is. Or have you had those dreams where maybe you had some intermediate or limited exposure to another language, but your dream is actually in a native style or native level language,
like Joey in Friends trying to speak French. That would be my kind of experience of that. Mm-hmm. A question here from Imran saying, sometimes toddlers smile and cry suddenly while sleeping. Is this because of dreams?
Are they experiencing dream content that's evoking these emotions? Quite possibly. And at the same time, it depends on age. You'll sometimes see babies smiling in their sleep.
Sometimes wind, trust me.
And it's sometimes wind. and is it reflex? So it's just, it's more for enjoying it than necessarily. It's a great question.
Completely off topic, but kind of on topic. What about animals dreaming? Everyone says that dogs dream in black and white. I've got two dogs, and I do think they do dream, because I see their little feet kind of paddling around as if they're, you know, having the best time
it's
on the beach.
It's cute, isn't it? It's like, oh, they're having little puppy dreams.
Yeah.
It's very sweet.
I wonder what they're dreaming about.
They say mammals dream.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there we go. It's your last chance to get your questions in for Chasti O'Connell. We've talked about the teeth dreams, the naked dreams, the stage fright and anxiety, being chased, flying and falling, all of those common dream interpretations as well. Talked about blindness, we've talked about paranormal kind of night terrors as well, about children. And what are your recurring dreams, Chasti? Do you have many?
Oh, that's...
Reveal yourself.
Oh my goodness. Well, now when the tables are turned.
Yeah, how does that feel?
I don't know if I like it so much. Reoccurring dreams. I have to think about that. I think, to be honest, the past 6 months to a year, my dreams have been all over the place. You know, everything from, I think I read this somewhere. It was really funny, where it was the top 10 things people have said, or top 30 things that people have said when they were dreaming. And the number one was like, you know, forget about you, Batman. You owe me $20. And I don't know why that makes me laugh. But do you like how I'm deflecting that question?
Yeah, I do.
It's given me some time to think about my
dreams. Well, I just want to quickly recap and talk about the difference between men and women. So apparently men's dreams are more often set outdoors. They're more action orientated, more aggressive, feature weapons and involve strangers more often than women's dreams do. Whereas women's dreams usually happen indoors and involve emotional encounters with people they know and care about. Interestingly, birth order also influences roles of aggression in dreams. While men typically experience more aggressive dreams than women, a firstborn male typically sees himself in a more positive manner than his younger male siblings do, whereas firstborn females tend to be more aggressive characters in their dreams. Women have slightly longer dreams that feature more characters, which comes back to my point of my kind of epic sagas with subplots and secondary characters and, you know, little symbolized riffs and all sorts of, you know, soundtracks and things like that. We've absolutely loved having you join our conversation this afternoon. Really, really enjoyed all of your input. One last message saying, I'm Nepalese, my wife British. I'm quadrilingual, so English, Nepalese, Hindi and Nawari. From the dreams I remember, I switch between English when I'm with my wife and friends. And with friends and family from Nepal, I speak Nawari, which is my mother tongue. If I ever dreamt of starring in a Bollywood movie, it would be in Hindi.
Oh, that's
absolutely
great.
Love it. That's so clever.
Chastity
O'Connell, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your wisdom. Always a pleasure to have
you
in the studio.
Likewise.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.